So I use proactive in the sense that you can't let someone else tell you to do it. You have to be the one to stay active and make that choice for yourself. I had just been in enough pain where I said, you know what? People are recommending this stuff to me. I will give it a shot. And wow, did it change my life. I'm a big proponent of police officers actively training in self-defense tactics on their own, like BJJ, Krav Maga, some kind of effective martial art. Turn off the radio. Turn off the news. Listen to podcasts. Watch motivational videos on YouTube. What you focus on, your brain's going to work on making it a reality for you. And that's something I wish I would have been taught about. Like, what you seek is what you will notice.
Welcome to another episode of Respond to Resilience, along with my co-hosts, Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW EMT, and Dr. Stacy Raymond, David Dashinger. On this episode, we'll be speaking with Marine Corps and law enforcement veteran, also author, speaker, and host of the 10 Code Mindset, Scott Medlin, and we'll talk about uncovering the hidden threats of being a civil servant that you won't encounter on the streets. And lastly, masterful strategies for navigating job trauma exposure.
This episode is sponsored by the Angio Foundation.
We would like to invite you to like and subscribe. Our YouTube channel is Respond to Resilience. We're on Facebook, Respond to Wellness Inc., PBSRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our website is ResponderTV.com with all our past episodes. We'll be right back to speak with Scott after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers. With vital information and resources, resilient strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Rumeli, LCSW EMTB.
So today we'll be speaking with Scott Medlin. He's a dynamic speaker and educator. Got an amazing YouTube channel as well for law enforcement. And what we're going to be looking at is that 40% of first responders suffer from mental health issues. And it's no wonder that one of the greatest complaints is lack of fulfillment on and off the job. Scott's 20 years of personal experience in the Marine Corps and law enforcement makes him relatable and empathetic to balancing your call to duty and the call to taking care of yourself. Welcome to Respond to Resilience, Scott.
I am honored to be here, David. Thank you so much. I'm really impressed with the intros, too. Wow, those are awesome.
Thanks. It's fun stuff.
It's nice to have you.
Thank you.
So I could start by, I'll ask you, you know, why did you get involved with first responder wellness? What prompted you to do that?
2017, 2018, I was 10 or 11 years on the job. And I just hit a low point where I had to resign from the canine unit because I let that job become my identity. And in return, I wasn't present to my wife and my son. My wife said to me what I never thought I would hear in my law enforcement career. It's either me or the job. And she says she was having thoughts of leaving me. All the signs were there looking back, but I just didn't take it seriously enough, nor was I really taking care of myself proactively. And then, so I went into a low place, really bad mentally, whenever I gave up the canine unit. And then my wife and I still had a lot of work to rebuild our marriage. But then in January of 2020, that's when I learned for the first time, after 12 years of being on the job, that more police officers were dying by suicide. I'm not saying that was a new phenomenon. That was just the first time I learned about it. And that didn't sit well with me because I thought to myself, wait a minute, why do we not know about this? And because I didn't know about it, other police officers, I'm sure, didn't know about it. Now, I know there's times have changed in the last 2 years and more do know about it. But are we really doing enough? Is it really being taken seriously enough? Like, this is bad. And that's where I was like, you know what? I'm just going to use what I've been through do some research, and I wrote my first book, Mental Health Fight of the Heroes in Blue, and I just went with it. And I've just made it my point to encourage police, first responders, people in general, as much as I possibly can.
Why do you think it's so important for police to be active in their mental health, aside from the suicide issue, which we all agree is pressing, and that's why we do the work we do, because if someone listens to this today, for example, and decides not to do it, then we've done our job today. You know, we try to help each person, mm-hmm. but why do you think it's so important just ongoing?
Because I didn't know until I went through some treatment and started researching for my book that our brains are negative by default. And then all of a sudden you get all this negativity and the toxicity and the trauma that the police and first responder world can have. And you don't proactively take care of yourself, it can just suck the life right out of you. It's even if you're not suicidal, proactive self-care is very important because our brains weren't designed to make us happy. I mean, I really wish I would have been taught that in the police academy. Seriously, when I first started, who knows how much different I would have looked at things. And that's why I believe it's very important. But it's also, we're human. We're never going to be perfect. And you have to grow as a person in a job that also is constantly evolving and changing. So if you're growing as a person, it can only help you as a person, but also help your performance to the public out there.
Yeah. What do you mean by proactive wellness, like working on yourself proactively? So can you just speak to that a little bit?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because police are all about proactive policing. Make those self-initiated stops. Make the self-initiated go out there and find people who have warrants on their name, stuff like that. So I use proactive in the sense that you can't let someone else tell you to do it. You have to be the one to stay active and make that choice for yourself. And there's like that mentality of leaders don't react. They plan and they prepare. For when things do happen, you're not just in a reactionary state. So when life hits you, because it hits all of us, and then maybe you go to a certain call that bothers you a lot, you don't want to be in a reaction mode. You want to have already done that proactive self-care so you know who you are, what you're doing, and you're grounded in a way, and you're strong as a person. So you can say, even though I'm shook up, I have this mentality that I'm going to be all right because I'm going to work my way through this, and I know exactly how.
Do you think your military background helps you think about being more proactive, preemptive, shall we say?
I'd say the military background was helpful when it came to discipline to do things like exercising, even when I didn't feel like doing it. Mm-hmm. The discipline was there, the self-discipline. Mm-hmm. But actually, when it comes to self-care, no, the military didn't really help because it's the same in the military where, you know, if you're ever bothered by something, don't you dare say it. You'll be looked at as weak. You know, I mean, there's still that kind of stigma, for lack of a better word. It's there. So that didn't really help. But the self-discipline, every time I realized I was in a low point and damage had been done, I wasn't going to stay there. I was going to work my way out of it.
Okay.
Scott, you mentioned, some of the things that could be taught at the academy, some of the skills or basic sort of knowledge that we could take into the job from being a rookie and a recruit, but it might help us along the way. So what, I know you're out there teaching this stuff and educating, lecturing, writing about it. What are some of the things that we could be doing better in the academy recruit level? Probably applies to fire as well as police, that would help people in their careers.
Oh, there's so many things, but what I really like to hammer home is, first off, you have to have a mindset of I'm going to take time for me. I mean, you know, David, I mean, first responders were so enthusiastic about getting out there and doing the job. And even when it's just draining you, you're still going to show up and put and enthusiasm and effort into it. But are you putting enough effort into yourself? So I talked to them about mindset and when there's the mindset to take care of yourself, that's when you have to establish the habits to take care of yourself. And then I do go into things, and I'm giving like a nutshell version of this. But I really do go into non-popular ways, but very effective ways that most laugh at me because I laughed at them too. Yoga, meditation, journaling. Trust me, I laughed at them too. I said, "There's no way this stuff helps. It's for sissies. Yeah. I'm not going to do it." And then I just swallowed my ego after enough years of being tense on the job, the ups and downs of battling an addiction, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder. I'd just been in enough pain where I said, you know what? People are recommending this stuff to me. I will give it a shot. And wow, did it change my life. So I recommend that kind of stuff as well. But yeah, but also just keep showing up for yourself each and every day and allot that time. Like wake up earlier before going to shift so you have that time to put for yourself.
If I can share my experience and help just one person, or help one person help somebody else, that's what it's all about.
We're trying to break down the stigma. We're trying to share that there are great, effective resources out there.
Vulnerability is a strength. It's not a weakness.
What I've heard from all of the subjects in my film is that I think my story can help someone else.
And as police officers, we always want to go in, see problem, fix problem. And you can't do that with a mental health crisis. You have to see person and connect with person.
This sucks, but I'm going to have to embrace this suck. You know, I don't like these cards, but these are the cards that I've been dealt, and I'm going to have to play them to the best of my ability. And I've been trying to do that for the last 10 years.
So, you know, right now, with I think every police department, at least where we're at in the East, on the East Coast, I don't know what it's like where you're at, Scott, staffing shortages, people being ordered in, doing double shifts. What do you recommend for officers to survive this? You know, it's even worse now, right? Because of the staff shortages, and also in some states, there's legislation, you know, that restricts what officers can do regarding use of force. You know, there's across the country, there's, you know, racial issues with regard to police. So can you comment on that as things seem to be getting worse for police?
Yeah. Don't get so disgruntled that you forget two of the key things in law enforcement or first responder work in general, respect and empathy. And if you get that post-traumatic stress disorder symptom of lack of emotional response or depression, maybe asocial tendencies, that's not good because you'll lose your ability to connect with people, and you have to be able to connect because you never know when you connect. Maybe you can prevent a use of force. But then I also recommend, I know it's tough to do, but we have to do what's tough that makes us feel better, but also makes us stronger. And I'm a big proponent of police officers actively training in self-defense tactics on their own, like BJJ, Krav Maga, some kind of effective martial art, where if you do have to use of force, it won't be, hopefully you'll be able to handle it a lot faster and safer and not receive a lot of criticism. I understand there's going to be the haters out there no matter what, but people are filming, so you might as well train and be proficient, because police are not overall trained proficiently in defensive tactics. But then when it comes to the just constant hours of working day in and day out, 12 plus hour shifts, be careful of what you're consuming, because your mind's already being exposed to enough, but be careful of what you're consuming. So I recommend, like in my latest book, 101 Useful Tips for Rookie Police Officers, I said, like, turn off the radio, turn off the news, listen to podcasts, watch motivational videos on YouTube, anything to help your mind get through these long hours, because what you take in is what you are, in addition to what you're exposed to. So work on it, and it's possible, and it's worth it, every bit of it.
That's a great tip. I used to work with a guy who would watch Fox News literally 24 hours a day. And as you can imagine, it creates kind of a toxic environment and some pretty toxic discussions. So I love your tips about podcasts and inspirational videos on YouTube.
Well, I like how much hope you have, and imparting that in the newer police is so incredibly important right now, because I think what Stacy and I are seeing in our offices and just at work in general over the last 6 months, there's so much negativity and there's so much fear. You know, our police that we know and work with, they're scared themselves right now. And I've never seen it at a level where it is right now. Mm-hmm. And the shootings of the Bristol officers in Connecticut,
awful.
You know, that's really, really been difficult. You know, and we're feeling the ripple effects from that. So I think it's very hard for police to try to maintain positivity and feel that they're making a difference in the world when they have to be so fearful themselves right now.
Yeah, regarding the danger and the and fear of getting in trouble. But I made a promise to myself that I was never going to let my safety be in jeopardy because I was in fear of being in trouble. I just kept training, self-defense tactics, and going to as much in-service training as I could at the community colleges or whatever, just to stay proficient, mentally rehearsing scenarios in my head. 2016, 2020 were in my memory for my active time in law enforcement, like pretty high anti-police rhetoric years. And I just tell officers, like, you have to have this mentality where if you arrive, then be there and do what's needed. And if you have respect, empathy, and you've got good training behind you and you have the right mentality, if you're in the right, you're in the right. And I get it. It's frustrating, but please don't let it get in the way of you being able to keep those safe, but also yourself.
Scott, I know you've written a number of books. Can you speak a little bit about it and the ones that are primarily written for police, but that may also apply to other first responders?
Oh, yeah, definitely. My first one was Mental Health Fight of the Heroes in Blue, which I can't believe was published over 2 years ago. But I mainly just broke down how we're human and we're not as tough as we think we are. And that's not a shot at anybody. I thought I was fine for the longest time. I'm fine. You know, and if I did find a rut, if I did find myself in a rut, like the addiction or depression states, yeah, I would go get assistance. But then all of a sudden I was right back. I'm fine. So I break that down into the innate wiring of the brain and then go into some strategies. But I didn't really give a lot of strategies in that book. And I said, you know what, it's not a one size fits all. So there's bound to be more strategies out there as to how police and first responders can cope and stay healthy during the career. So I came out with 101 health tips for police officers. That book has actually done pretty dang well and has read. So I put physical, mental, spiritual, social tips in there. And they're not every tip's for everybody, but there's a ton in there. So you can at least get one out of it. And then the last two books I made were pretty much for the newer police officers. And I made them short because I know people don't like to read a lot. So I made them really short, but profound. And the great thing with the last one was I had other experts, one of them being Ernie Stevens, who I know has been on your show before. He elaborated on some things, and other experts as well gave techniques. So it's been a good book so far. But that was the story behind the books and kind of the content behind them.
Excellent.
Well, here's an interesting question because, you know, being a first responder myself, there's a good amount of toxicity that's involved at our workplaces, whether you're paid or volunteer. And so I'm wondering if you could draw on some of those tips you've given others, but how do you deal with that? And how do you put those people in a nice, neat little box so that you can go about your day and be the good person you are?
I, for one, fell victim, for lack of a better phrase, to the toxicity. My very first year, like the first year when a cop's supposed to be just so excited to be working and at their department, a little after my first year, I quit and I went to another department because I got wrapped in with a bunch of negative officers who negatively influenced me, and I made a very bad negative decision. Now, fortunately, the hometown department that I was working for, after 8 months and I realized my mistake, they took me back. But they chewed me out for like an hour and a half on the oral board, which I fully deserved. But my thing is, like, I made the mistake. I didn't let the negative officers pull me back in when I came back there. Am I saying I never complained? Oh, gosh, no. No, I mean, it happens. We're human. But there's just there at some point you have to make a promise to yourself. You will constantly be your, like, doctors assess people. Why can't we assess ourselves? There's a really big need for self-awareness. And cops are really trained pretty much overall pretty well in, like, external risk, external threats, you know, certain behaviors you pick up on that people might be a threat to you or the public. But yet, are you aware of internal risks, internal threats? Are you blowing them off? Or you know, and then when it comes to the toxicity, I would just say, know who you are. You don't have to be miserable because five officers are around you are miserable. They don't have to set your tone of mind. They really don't. And if anything, when they see you try to be positive and uplifting and be authentic and not be down all the time, they're going to keep trying even harder to pull you down because they don't see themselves being happy. And if need be, have that difficult conversation seriously and just say to the person, like, I'm not seeing eye to eye with you on this. We got to work, or, you know, I look at things this way. You look at them that way. I'm here to help you out if need be, but we really got to change the tone of conversation because you're already exposed to enough toxicity, negativity, and trauma and stress and demands in the job dealing with the public.
This episode is sponsored by the Angio Foundation, a public trust supporting first responder health and safety through prevention and early detection of cancer.
Our mission at Responder Wellness, Inc. is to subsidize or provide free of charge safety equipment and wellness services to first responders, including police officers, firefighters, EMS personnel, and 911 operators throughout Connecticut. Resources include scholarships to train new EMTs, a responder and veteran-only AA group in Danbury, Connecticut, as well as police vests, a fire and EMS boot program, yoga classes, gym memberships, and t-shirts. The founder of Responder Wellness, Inc. co-leads a peer support group sponsored by Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. Responder Wellness, Inc. is a nonprofit 501c3. Find us on the web at responderwellness.org, on Facebook at Responder Wellness, Inc., or email us responderwellness@gmail.com. Responder Wellness, Inc., putting responders first.
Right. I can totally relate to what you're saying. I literally would leave the kitchen sometimes when those, you know, toxic conversations were happening at the firehouse and just go somewhere else, you know, like take a walk outside, just look at the sky and, you know, kind of get chilled out and not sucked into that, because we get enough kind of toxic energy going on some of these calls where people are having their own crisis that we're trying to, you know, help them with. But also, yeah, great idea, you know, kind of have something else to redirect the conversation if it's a, you know, it's a gossip, complaining kind of conversation. I love that you have, bring up something else, whatever, you know, the NFL, or check out that, you know, Ferrari in front of us. So
it's a good strategy.
I was going to say this really needs to be hammered home to the new officers when they're coming in, so they're already aware about it.
Oh, absolutely. Right. That misery loves company, and it's almost infectious. Yeah. Right. So if you've got three people bitching about something, they kind of expect the other people to kind of join in, you know? And so there's that pressure. There's peer pressure, believe it or not, even when you're an adult. So,
so especially try not to when you're an adult.
So, you know, you've talked a lot about protecting yourself as a first responder, self-awareness, making sure that you take care of your physical health, mental health. What about the family of first responders? How does a first responder make sure that the family is not affected by all that's going on for their loved one?
I heard for the longest time during my career, when you get home, take the uniform off, turn the radio off, don't think about it. But how many times did I go home and I was either thinking about what I had just seen, a fight I had just been in like an hour prior, and my brain's still trying to process it. How can you just take it off and it's that easy? No, it's not that easy. You have to understand it's not that easy. So I encourage any police officer, any first responder, particularly on those tough days, before you get home, take some deep breaths, stretch, listen to uplifting music, just do something to set you up better with some more better cognitive information, because for your brain, just healthy stuff for your brain. Because if you take what you've just experienced and you go straight home, I know you think you might turn it off, but like I came home a lot of times irritable, angry, and my wife would be like, really, are we doing this again? But you know, I just took the uniform off and left work at work, at least I thought, but totally wrong. Yeah. Five to 10 minutes before you get home, breathing, stretching, talking to someone and laughing, whatever, do something, and then, also when there is tension at home, please handle it. I looking back at when I had to save my marriage, the signs were there where I could have not worked as much off duty because I thought we needed the money that bad. We really didn't. I should have spent more time at home versus going to work off duty and stuff like that. Just where there's a problem, there's also a solution. Focus on the solution and don't stay in the problem.
Don't you think that first responders also, they avoid, right? They avoid what is right in front of them. So if they're struggling themselves, they avoid until it's now panic mode and they're calling us and it's 911. I think they do the same thing with their family. You know, I think they take it for granted sometimes that the spouse will be there, or there's also this mentality like, well, you signed up for it. You knew that I was a cop, or you knew that I was a firefighter. Like, you knew what you're getting into, rather than realizing what a shock that is, not only to you, but to the person you're living with, that when you walk in the door, you aren't yourself. Like, you need all this additional time sometimes just to be functioning normally, or having a dog jump on you, or having kids say, come on, let's play. And you've been in a war zone an hour before, right? I think that first responders avoid it until it's too late. And like you said, with your ultimatum, that's often where it has to get in order for people to wake up.
Yeah. Yep. Good points, Bonnie. And you're right. I was that one. I never thought it would happen to me. And no first responder thinks it'll happen to them until it does. And unfortunately, it's thousands across the country. And I just encourage more to open up about it, because if you open up about it, one, you realize the problems you went through are not as unique, and there's others who can help you through it. But two, it just brings awareness to it. Maybe people take it a little bit more seriously rather than this, no, hush, 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 we're tough, I'm good, I'm fine, or avoid it, like you said.
Yeah.
Let's talk about leadership or leadership development and some of the concepts we've already discussed, like, you know, creating tools so that police officers, firefighters, paramedics, EMTs, even dispatchers can kind of cope and remain healthy. Like, Scott, what do you see as some of the things that we can do if we're a supervisory position, or even if we're trying to cultivate emerging leaders? How would you guide them to support their people?
I would just say simply, like, if you go to a call and it's something upsetting, if you ask an officer or whoever, how you doing? And if they say, oh, I'm fine, be like, no, wait. you just saw something. Like, was that sad? You're right, it was sad. Okay, at least you acknowledged a human emotion you went through. Just through general conversation, get the honesty out. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, like, break down in the middle of a call and cry. I'm not asking for that. Just, I think we need to stop burying the, oh, he or she said, you know, they were good. We'll leave it alone. But also, I recently in August traveled to Pinole, California, where I definitely have to give a shout out to Police Chief Neil Gang. I mean, he's one of the big leaders when it comes to law enforcement wellness and resiliency. They had a Zen room at the Pinole Police Department, a chair that actually massages them. They can play peaceful music. They have one of those, is it a lava lamp or whatever, you know, to emit a peaceful frequency or whatever. I don't know. But also he brings in people to normalize it and teach about it. And I was honored to be a part of that. But it's normalizing it in the police department, and it's also bringing solutions so that you don't have to stay miserable. If you find yourself in a bad place, you've at least been informed how you can work your way out of it. Nobody can make you do it. But then also, I think that leaders just have to start. Like, in my experience, when I was still active, I would walk into roll call and the supervisors would walk in. They would get right to business. I mean, just right to reading the emails, up whatever the new policy was, whatever any kind of criticism needs to get out. I'm not saying don't criticize someone if they messed up. Obviously, it needs to be addressed and fixed. But sometimes it wasn't even a good evening. Hope you're doing well. We obviously went through a lot the previous shift. If you need to talk, if you need to vent, just let me know. You don't have to tell anyone else. Or if it was that big of a deal, we have peer support or what, at least let them know about the resources, just all in this thing to normalize it. Because we can't just keep going about it like, oh, no big deal, it's just part of the job. Okay, it might be part of the job, but it's not part of what you as a human were just supposed to see time and time again and not do anything extra about and then be expected to stay normal without having to go through any troubles. Okay, ran over.
No, it seems to me that they're avoiding it too. Right. It's like if we keep avoiding it, we can just pretend everything works out okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a no-brainer that you're talking about that, Chief, bringing these resources to the PD. I mean, what better thing? Because, you know, people don't have time. They don't have a lot of time in their lives to do sometimes these extra things that we're talking about. But how great would it be if the work environment offered some of that? Like you said, a Zen chair or whatever it is. Like bring people in.
Yeah, like a gym.
Yeah, a gym, or you know, you bring in a massage therapist or some acupuncture, whatever it is, right? Like if you make it available to them, you don't really have to do anything. You just have to make it available.
Yep, absolutely.
Fairfield County Trauma Response Team is a nonprofit alliance of mental health professionals dedicated to helping first responders heal from trauma, tragedy, and stress. We help as they manage community crises and the everyday demands of ensuring public health and safety. Established in 2011, FCTRT was formed in response to a call for emotional help from the Stamford Fire Department after a traumatic fatal fire. Less than a year later, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting occurred, and members again served the first responder community. Most recently, COVID-19 created a need for our support. We provide free educational presentations, pro bono sessions to deal with community disasters, and an extensive referral service to trauma-informed psychotherapists. If you're a responder in Fairfield County and need help dealing with duty-related stress, please reach out to us so you can continue to do the job you love. Visit our website at fctrt.org or find us on Instagram at Fairfield County TRT.
Do you have any other points that you feel like we haven't covered or anything really, really important that you want to make sure that our guests hear?
I learned about something that really can make or break our mental health, and this is for people in general. I really wish it would have been taught to me early on in the police career that your brain has this filter called the reticular activating system. Now, I know, pretty sure all you know about it, but basically what you focus on, your brain takes any bit of sensory information for that thing and makes it important to you and also brings it to your front level of thinking. So basically it's your mind's filter. What you focus on is what you're going to notice more of. So if you're seeking ways to be, if you're seeking how the admin can offend you, by gosh, your brain's going to go to work on looking for it. If you're seeking negativity, your brain's already going to be looking for it, but it's just going to amplify it that much more. But if you seek to focus on how you can be better prepared and trained and healthy for the career, then your brain starts to pick up all the sensory pieces of information around you. And it starts working and changing and realigning neurons and all this communication within it to bring it to your front and center mind, but also you can be more willing to act. And so if you couldn't remember the term I said to anyone listening or watching, at least remember the fact that what you focus on, your brain's going to work on making it a reality for you. And that's something I wish I would have been taught about. Like what you seek is what you will notice. And there's that saying, where energy goes, energy flows.
So Scott, what are you doing now? What are you out there doing in terms of encouraging and inspiring police and other first responders with, obviously you've got a great message and you've written some great books around it. So how do you spread the word?
Well, thank you, first of all. And then, like, what's today? November 2nd. Okay, so in 4 days, I'll be speaking the closing keynote at the National Cops Conference, to which I am excited, but at the same time, like, oh my gosh, what? I'm gonna bring them 100% of my heart, and we'll just see if it resonates with at least one. But I'm doing that. So I like to speak at conferences. I like to speak at police academies. I just got reached out to their head of a police academy near close to where I am, and they'll have me in January over there, hopefully, if all things work out, which hopefully they will. So basically, whoever calls, if they have an audience, I'll be there. And I don't come as some know-it-all. Absolutely not. I come as someone who never thought I would have been treated for an addiction, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder. And I come as support, encouragement, and knowledge as to how you can come out of it, or even if you're doing well, how you can continue to be a better version of yourself, because that's what we all have to work on. And I will continuously, as best I can, show up on LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, and the podcast.
Well, your energy and passion are very infectious, and I'm sure you're doing a great job inspiring emerging leaders and law enforcement officers out there. So keep up the good work, Scott. We appreciate what you're up to.
I'll do my best. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott.
How can people find you out there on the internet or social media?
TheScottMedlin.com is my website, but if you're on YouTube or podcast platforms, just type in the 10 code mindset, the number 10, like 10, the 10 code mindset. And I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter as well.
Excellent. Again, thank you for being with us. This has been a great conversation, and it's always wonderful when there are solutions to some of these serious problems that are plaguing our profession. So again, thanks for being inspiring and having a positive outlook on how we can change the culture.
Well, I appreciate it. It's not going to be easy, but it's worth it, and we might as well give it all we've got. And I say that coming from someone who has been hopeless at one point. And you don't have to stay there, and you can work your way out of it and then continue to work on you, which only helps you in your job performance, which is, I know, what you value.
This episode is sponsored by the Angio Foundation.
We'd like to invite you to like and subscribe on YouTube, Responder Resilience, Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc., bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our website is respondertv.com. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself, take care.